Joining us in the studio today, I have the program director of Te Kahutu, Amelia Trotter. Hello, Amelia.
Hi.
Now, listeners may not have heard of Te Kahutu. A few things I want to get off the bat is what it means, what it is we're going to talk about today, and then we'll get right into it because, as you will hear, this is a really big and exciting subject that we're going to talk about. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So talk us through, what does it mean, the words, because it's got a beautiful story around it.
Te Kahutu is the soaring hawk. That's the literal translation.
And this is the name of a new centre. Do we call it a centre?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're referring to the property, the kōhanga, which is the premises that we're building, and the program that will take place there, all as Te Kahutu. They're all part of it.
Yeah. Gorgeous. So the reason why Amelia is coming to talk to us today, because this is a new venture that is occurring here on the Kapiti Coast, and it's very exciting because it is dealing with the rangatahi, 13 to 17-year-olds that have got themselves into quite a state, I guess, and we're seeing a lot of it here on the coast. And there is hope, and there are amazing people that actually see that a program can be put in place to redirect these youths. How do you do it? What are you building and how do you do it?
What are we building? So we have a 37-acre property in Raikorangi, and so this is like a kind of lifestyle block.
Yeah.
We have been converting it into an organic, biodynamic, kind of regenerative farm for about 7 years now. And we are building what we call a kōhanga, a premises for this program that we are in the throes of establishing, which will be for potentially 13 to 18-year-olds. We haven't quite landed on the age range. Ideally, it would be more like 15 to 18-year-olds to keep the age bracket a little bit tighter. But there are factors in play that will determine what the age range is as we move forward. So it'll be a day program.
Okay.
It won't be residential.
Yeah.
We will draw rangatahi from the greater Wellington region and potentially as far as Palmerston North, not yet to be determined again.
So to give the listeners some background, you studied criminology and psychology at Victoria University.
I did.
And you also were the manager of the Wellington City Mission for quite some time and set up and ran an alternative school.
Yeah, the youth services at the City Mission under Des Britton when he was the City Missioner back in the day.
Yeah, what a marvellous man.
He was a marvellous man. He was really, really like a father to me.
Really?
Yeah, same age as my dad. And he just took me under his wing and really looked after me and kind of spoilt me, gave me everything I wanted. And he had a real heart for youth. So I was very fortunate to work under him because he put a lot of redirected a lot of City Mission resources towards my programs while I was there. And he just had a lot of faith in me and let me do. When I think about how young I was when I went to the City Mission, I was 24. When I started managing the youth services, and I just it kind of blows my mind how much trust he put in me.
Well, yeah. Amelia, look what's happened. I mean, here you are sitting in front of me talking about this incredible centre that you're putting together, and we'll dig into that. But what you're putting together is not something to be taken lightly. So he obviously saw something in you. He was also very, from what I know of him, he was also incredibly wonderful and such a supporter of women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny you should say that because I probably never thought about it at the time, but I just don't really think he saw gender.
No, probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I think about him and Lorraine as a couple, they were quite kind of flamboyant and colourful in their own ways. So, yeah, I just don't know that gender was a big thing for him.
Yeah. He could just see, he sees the person.
Mm. And he was so ahead of his time in some ways, particularly for, you know, an Anglican priest, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a remarkable man and I really miss him.
Yeah,
I
bet you do.
Yeah.
So to have a mentor like that must have been incredible. It's obviously shaped you. I did not know that backstory, yeah, but it's obviously shaped you into, or has helped shape you into the person that you are. So you worked at City Mission for how long?
So I set up the services for youth 26 years ago. So that included what we called an educational day program, which was a program for teenagers that were being kicked out of school, getting into offending, drug and alcohol issues. Most of them had traumatic backgrounds. And they were mainly 15 to 18-year-olds. So the activity centres that the Ministry of Education provides for teenagers usually really age out around 15, 16. So we were trying to fill the gap for kids that weren't ready to go out into the world and really needed a lot of support. And I was trying to make it a comprehensive, holistic service. So we had a couple of full-time therapists and a full-time social worker, as well as youth workers, and two teachers in the program. And that kind of meant that we could really work with the families, work with the trauma, and provide a really holistic approach. So that was, as I said, 26 years ago, and I ended up leaving the City Mission when I was pregnant with our youngest child, and our eldest children at that point were becoming teenagers, and I was like, I'm kind of feeling like I need a break from working with and living with teenagers. So I kind of thought I was done, to be honest, but our youngest will be 21 soon, and yeah, I'm ready to really to go back there. and this time I you know, I've had this kind of vision in my head of what I would now call Te Kau Tū, for probably either since my criminology degree, or it might have developed during my master's in criminal justice. And I just feel like I thought I'd done it when I went to the City Mission. I thought I'd realised that dream, but I have become aware that there was a very critical component that was missing, which was actually connecting the rangatahi to the whenua,
yeah,
which is, I think, one of the most healing components of what Te Kau Tū will offer. So that's, yeah, the backstory.
Can you talk me through when you and your husband went onto the land? What happened for the first time when you went there?
Yeah, so it was kind of spur of the moment. I had seen this property online. I'd fallen in love with it. And I just kind of knew in my heart that it was the right property. And I, of course, had to find a whole lot of other properties, because my husband would not have just, if he didn't feel like I'd done due diligence, he would not have agreed. Yeah. So I found some other ones in the kind of Kapiti region, and none of which I liked anywhere near as much. And we were driving home from the Hawke's Bay, and I said to him, "Oh, should we pop by that property in Raukurangi? Should we give the agent a call and see if we can stop and look at it?" And the agent wasn't available, but we were told by someone in the office just to drop in where it was. And so we turned up there and wandered onto the property, and my husband was just off circumnavigating the whole property, I was like, I walked, I don't know, maybe 10 meters onto the property and almost like fell to my knees because I was like this, I could feel the energy of this piece of fenua. And I think there's very few people who've come there who haven't had a similar experience. It's a very, very special property, and it's, you know, in some way sacred, I believe. So, yeah, I was like, okay, this is it. I can't even take another step onto this property because I could feel myself falling in love with it. And that's where Te Kahu came in, because, you know, I was kind of just sitting there going, oh, you know, what if he says no? What if it's not available? What if, you know, we can't get it? I kind of need a sign to know that this is the place. This is the right place. Because, of course, we were looking at it with the program in mind. And, a hawk just appeared, circling overhead, and I was kind of, okay, there's my sign. So I was kind of pretending to be pretty cash and not too excited about this. I could tell that my husband really liked it because he wasn't as negative as he might be otherwise. So he spoke to the agent the next day, and the agent told him that it was sold. And my husband rang me and was like, I'm really sorry, but apparently it's sold. And I'm like, no, it's not. He's like, well, the agent didn't even want to take my phone number because he's so determined that the sale's going through. And I'm like, I don't believe it. Something's going to happen. I just absolutely know this is the right property. So sure enough, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 weeks later, the agent called him and said that the sale had fallen through. And so, yes.
I love the story.
Yeah.
It feels to me, I got goosebumps when I was listening to that. It feels like to me that the land was calling you and you were given permission.
Yeah.
Yep. To do this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
So it's a very special place. Mm-hmm. It sounds sacred.
Mm-hmm.
Talk us through then how your vision is coming to fruition. What are you building there, and what will the children be doing?
Yeah. So the kohanga has an administrative office. It has a big commercial kitchen and dining area with a walk-in pantry and a walk-in chiller, so that one of the components, the key components of the program, will be teaching the rangatahi about nutrition, how to really nurture their bodies through nutrition. So real food, which some of these kids are not so well acquainted with.
It's, you know, really sad.
Yeah,
and it's very sad. Affect you.
Oh, it affects
mentally, yeah, physically.
Exactly, emotionally. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they will be growing their own food, farming their own food, and then learning how to harvest and prepare food from scratch. And they'll be eating meals in a kind of whānau environment. A lot of these kids probably haven't had that.
Yeah.
And, we're just going to provide a safe space for all of that to happen. We're going to have a music studio there.
That's awesome.
I know. It's very exciting. My husband's hugely passionate about music, and our kids are all musicians in their own rights. This is one of his little pet projects, putting together this little music studio. There's a massive garage space, which we're going to try and keep relatively empty because on days where the kids can't be outside because of the weather, they could work on projects in that space. It's also an area where goods can be delivered directly into the kitchen, and on one side of it there's a wall-less room, well, a room with no front wall into the garage that will have big sinks where they can clean produce and stuff and deliver it straight into the kitchen. And then at the back of the building, there's an entrance where kids can come in muddy and wet from the working in the gardens. And there's a drying room with a log burner that has a little wet back, because we're trying to be as sustainable and environmentally conscientious as possible. So the drying room, the kids can put all their wet gear in there, and the wet back will heat the hot water so they can shower. There's also solar panels that will work when the log burner's not, because of the weather, when the log burner's not working. So they can then go into the shower block, which is across from the drying room, and shower, and there's a laundry next to that, put all their dirty things in there, and be set for whatever's next. So there'll be components of the day that are outdoors and really on the whenua, farming, you know, gardening. And then there'll be other components to the program which are inside. So then going upstairs, we have a 200 square meter room, massive room. So the boys might be doing morako or kapaka or things that they need space for. And we will have whānau hui there. We will, you know, invite the community to come in and be a part of what we're doing. Let the rangatahi show what they're learning or what they're making or whatever. So because we are very intent on making the community a part of this.
Absolutely. And I know you want to talk to me about all the support that you've had. I want to firstly acknowledge what you've just said, because all I feel when you're talking about that is that perhaps some of these rangatahi have never had, I shouldn't say all of them, but maybe they haven't had that care and love. Mm. When you provide clean clothes, somewhere to shower, somewhere warm, somewhere safe, they may not have had that. Can you explain to us some of the backgrounds that these rangatahi have come from and why they have turned out the way they have, and how you're getting them back on track?
Yeah, well, you know, I've got a few statistics here that one of my volunteers put together for me. And when you look in New Zealand at at-risk 15 to 24-year-olds, 62% of them are Māori, 7% are Pacifica, and, you know, the remainder are Pākehā. But given that Māori are only 15% of our population, it's, you know, that's kind of horrific.
That's a dreadful figure.
Yeah. Out of these at-risk kids, 58% will have had involvement with New Zealand's mental health services.
Okay.
And if they continue down the track they're going, 46% will receive a custodial sentence at some point. So, you know, it's not a pretty picture.
It's a dreadful picture.
And one of the things we know about these kids are that most of them come from traumatic backgrounds.
Yeah.
In America, they talk about the ACEs study, so adverse childhood experiences. Most of these kids would have multiple adverse childhood experiences. A lot of them will have had a parent in jail. most of them will have experienced neglect or abuse growing up. And this is just the reality of what they're living with every day. So their nervous systems are dysregulated because of the trauma they've experienced, and it's very difficult for them to be functional because they're not having their needs met.
Yeah. Have you seen occurrences where this trauma can be through generations?
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely correct, and most often it is.
Have you seen turnaround where these young people, our people, have been able to get through the other side
with this assistance? I absolutely have seen young people change their lives around, and unfortunately sometimes the help comes too late.
Yeah.
And statistically, if a young person is incarcerated, their chances of being reincarcerated just skyrocket.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is be the ambulance at the top of the cliff.
Yeah.
And actually really be... And I don't know if you've watched the Takao Chiru promotional video on our website, but... And a little side story. There are two men interviewed in that video. Both of them have lived experience. So one of them was actually at my program that I ran at the City Mission. And he was thriving for the food. He has a tragic backstory. Severe abuse and neglect. And was living on the streets when he came or shortly before he came to us. And he came to us because his girlfriend at the time, who was also living on the streets, her mother brought them in, the two of them, and said, these two were, I think they were 15. They're living with me now, but they need something to do. So we took them on, and they really both thrived in the program. It was such a healing place for both of them. And it's, for Marvin, it was probably one of the safest places he's been until he went to live with his girlfriend's mother. His partner got pregnant when she was about 16. And he left because he wanted to kind of take care of her, take care of the baby. But he was so young.
Too young.
And he was he hadn't fully healed.
Yeah.
And unfortunately the relationship didn't survive, and then he ended up going down the gang path, and he ended up in jail. And he's fortunate because he's really managed to turn his life around. He's quite a remarkable I won't say young man, he's in his 30s now.
Yeah.
And he has children and a happy family life, and he's pretty functional, but it might not have turned out that way for him.
It's a very thin line.
It's a very thin line, yeah. So the other man in the video is Jai Tiahanga, who will be our program manager at Te Kau Chiu. And he has a remarkable story as well. He went to jail at 19 for murder, and really he couldn't read or write when he went to jail at 19. And he taught himself in jail.
Gosh.
He not only taught himself, he then got himself a degree.
Really?
While he was in jail for 12 years. Yeah.
He just needed somewhere to focus. Well, he needed a lot of things.
Well, he was lucky because, he's a remarkable person, and he had an experience with the father of the victim of his offence. And the father basically said to him, if you don't turn your life around, I could never forgive you.
That and is that powerful. Was
massively motivating for him. It wouldn't have been for everyone.
True.
But it was for him because he really wanted to make amends. And so he just set to work on himself in a way that his capacity to do that, to me, is remarkable given his trauma.
Mm.
And a lot of people with the amount of trauma he had experienced would not have been able to do that. So,
what an incredible person.
What an incredible person, and what an incredible role model for these rangatahi.
Because they will not be able to get anything past him for a start.
Mm.
He knows it.
No. Inside out.
What a gift he was given. I understand that not everyone could do what he did. It's quite extraordinary. Yeah. But what a gift that the father of the victim gave to that man. Mm. That Absolutely. Is so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, and he wasn't giving it as a gift.
Yeah.
He was almost giving it as a threat.
Yeah. Oh, I understand. Yeah.
But, you know, it was healing. Mm.
That's an extraordinary story. Mm. So this is why I get a little bit upset when people just say things like, oh, the kids, you know, they're just naughty or they're bad or throw them in jail. Mm. There's no understanding of where these people have come from and what they've had to deal with.
Yeah, and even more than that, it's very short-sighted.
Yeah.
How do we break this intergenerational pattern of trauma?
Yeah.
If that's our attitude.
Mm.
And from one generation to the next, it's cumulative, you know. So if we want to really make a change for the future of our nation, for the future of our children, our grandchildren, we really need to find a new way forward. That's not so punitive, that's not so short-sighted. Yeah.
Can you then talk me through what it's like then for these kids to heal by having their hands in the dirt? I know how healing it is. Mm. I'm a gardener. If I'm not in a great mood, in a great space, I'm out in the garden or I'm hugging a horse, one of those two things.
Yeah.
And that to me grounds me and just that Absolutely. Helps me. I haven't had that sort of trauma though. Yeah. That's just an experience that I have. Can you please tell me?
Well, you know, we've all had trauma
to a different
degrees. So if we're open to it, we all know what it's like to be kind of dysregulated in our nervous systems. Like when you're having a bad day, you might feel anxious, you might feel kind of churned up inside, you might be in your head, have ruminating thoughts. Imagine living with daily violence or not knowing when or if you're going to get your next meal or, you know, there's gangs all around you in your neighbourhood and you're scared to go out of the house. The kind of trauma a lot of these rangatahi are growing up with, the dysregulation that we feel at times where we have a huge stress, some of them are living with it all day, every day. And it takes a huge toll on their nervous systems and their ability to function in daily life. Yeah.
And so this is where often they lash out or they get involved with a gang of kids because it may not be perfect, but it's some form of connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is one of the issues in our culture in our society, increasingly over the last three or four generations, because of the values, I believe, of our culture, we have graduated away as teenagers from really being in the bosom of our families to being raised by our peers. And the problem with this is our peers do not have fully formed brains.
Mm.
And so they're not really able to show us the way that we should behave to be functional members of society. And if our parents are overwhelmed and exhausted, they don't have the capacity to be the parents we need them to be. Or maybe they're just overworked, so they're never at home and we're raising ourselves.
Mm.
So there's a lot of social issues that are creating the perfect conditions for these kids to really go off the rails.
Yeah. So you're providing that community that we all really need growing up. Humans, really, we're supposed to be part of a community.
Absolutely. And so it
takes a village. That's kind of gone.
Yeah,
and exactly. When you add in all the trauma of a parent being in a gang, and they've also suffered, I would suggest, at the hands of something. You know, that it's going through the generations. So you're kind of putting trying where you can to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
And helping these rangatahi.
Yeah.
At a very crucial time in their lives. You mentioned 15 to 18. I can sort of, I'm assuming we talk a lot to the local police here that age of rangatahi getting into trouble is getting younger and younger.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's why we're trying to remain open to the possibility of taking younger kids. But I just want to circle back to, sorry, you asked me a question earlier about the whenua.
Yeah.
So one thing as a trauma therapist that I've learned is you talk about getting grounded, and one of the best ways, because of the magnetic force of the earth, one of the best ways to get grounded is actually by putting our bare skin on the earth. And it really just pulls a lot of the anxious, unsettled energy inside our nervous system. The earth becomes like a resource, a support for our body, our human body. And that can literally drain the trauma that's circulating in our nervous system into a more manageable level. So, yes, having the rangatahi in nature with their hands in the soil is going to be one of the most impactful forms of therapy. And we'll be doing a lot of different types of therapy with them. But to me, that will be one of the most critical ones. Yeah.
For those listening who just maybe want to try it even for themselves, there is a lot of science around in the morning, first thing in the morning, taking off, don't walk, don't put your shoes and socks on, go outside.
Stand on the earth. Find I do it a bit of earth.
Yeah. Don't stand on a bee, because that would then probably sully the experience. But go out there and earth, ground yourself each day, and just then you will get an idea of what Amelia is talking about. And you've imagine you've woken up and you're in a nice house and you haven't got really too many things going on. And that's helping you heal. Imagine if you can put yourself in the shoes of those young people and see how that may help them. You're extraordinary. Can I just say you are one extraordinary lady. I'm so grateful that you are here. Sorry, I'm getting emotional because it's just so beautiful to have a conversation with someone who is making a huge difference. I know it's not open yet, but you've done all that work. And all the work that Des Britton started, you know, you're continuing it on.
Yeah.
And you're also, you're creating these other fantastic mentors and soldiers for the next generation of rangatahi to be guided by and be protected by. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, we're excited because it's actually, you know, as I said, it's been a dream of mine for close to 30 years, and we're finally getting there.
And support. Talk us through who's supporting you.
So there's a few organisations that I'd like to acknowledge. Number one would be Kāwhiri Rotary, who have been hugely supportive and generous to us and continue with that relationship to the point where some of their members turn up to our working bees. We've had a really significant donation for our gardens from the Nikko Foundation, and they're really trying to open up other funding possibilities for us as well. We've had the Biodynamic Association has a an arm called Kite Ora, and they gave us a grant to really embark on our biodynamic journey. We have had our insurance broker, Crombie Lockwood, send 17 staff out to do a working bee and plant. They gave us $1,000 worth of trees.
How great.
And their staff came out for the day, and along with the mayor and some councillors and other community members, we planted hundreds of trees on the property. We've had so many members of the Kāwhiri community, the Raikorangi community, come along to our working bees, wanting to volunteer on all sorts of levels. I really want to give a huge shout out to my, what I call my executive volunteer team, because these people behind the scenes, I wouldn't be here without them. They have worked tirelessly for years now, helping build the website, look for funding, organise working bees, price up things for the kōhanga. I mean, the list is so, so long. And fortunately, we've got a growing number of people wanting to join that team because we really need a lot of help when you're working on volunteer power with people who have full-time jobs and families and things.
Yeah,
there's so much to be done, and I'm just so super grateful for my volunteers. I mean, I couldn't do this by myself. And I think that was my biggest problem. I tried to do it by myself for a long time and didn't get very far. So it's been super rewarding to be part of that community of people who just have really beautiful hearts and want to make a difference in the world.
Yeah. You're not quite open yet. You're still building. You're still putting it together. Mm-hmm. But hoping to maybe have something up and running in the next few months?
Yes, early to mid next year. There's a lot of factors that it'll depend on. Number one will be funding.
Mm.
So we're in conversation with Ōrana Tamariki, have been for a long time, and we're embarking on building a relationship with Te Ate Awa, which is the local iwi here. As you know, their marae is just here. Because that's an important component for us to really have a reciprocal relationship with local iwi.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's a number of factors and that will determine when we can actually kick off the program.
Yeah.
But funding is a huge one.
Any government funding?
Well, Ōrana Tamariki would potentially provide funding for us, but it's with all the budget cuts and everything else, it's not an easy time for them. So we're still, as I said, in conversations about that at the moment.
Because you can see, you know, the less or the more work you do now, as you say, ambulance at the top of the hill, the more of that work that happens now, the better it is, not just financially, but less kids going into the justice system.
Mm-hmm. Could I just make one comment on what you just said?
Absolutely.
In 2015, Treasury released a report stating that the lifetime savings to keep one person from entering the justice system was up to $6.2 million.
What?
One person.
One person.
And with inflation, because that was 2015, that's the equivalent of $7.75 million today. So, you know, if Te Kau Cheu could divert even 13 boys from the adult justice system, we'd be saving the country $100 million.
Just letting that sink in. I mean, you should not have any problems getting funding, logically.
Yeah.
It makes no sense if the money doesn't go there. Yeah. Okay, so for listeners that want to get involved, that want to perhaps have some ideas about sending funds your way to help save the country $100 million, where can they go to find more information?
Tekautu.org is our website. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And Tekau is T-E-K-A with a macron, but actually on the internet they don't recognise the macron.
Yes.
H-U-T-I-U. So that's .org. I think it also comes up under .com.
We will link that on our website as well, so people can go back and find that. And if we get any questions, we'll certainly pass them your way. I'm very, very honoured to have you in the studio today, and really looking forward to seeing it all come to fruition and see these rangatahi in your guidance, in your care, in your arms.
You'll have to come out and have a look at the property.
I definitely will be coming out. Yeah. Amelia, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And we'll talk soon. I'm sure the listeners will want to find out how it's all going.
Thanks.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.